Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Others that would like to speak on this, please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and I have to tell you that this is shocking. I'm amazed that our city had not taken a step like this back before the 2008, from 2008 to 2012, and up till now I can see the financial constraints, but really I would have thought that Portland would have had a full-time person looking at employee integration, because although we're talking really, you know, on the urgent need for our city government to step up and do the right thing now for people with identified mobility and perception impairments, or, you know, whatever the politically correct language is, the truth is that the majorly successful workplaces, Microsoft, Apple, Google, pay many people to facilitate employee integration into the workplace. And if you want to be a city government, a municipal government that is on the edge of highest performance of delivering service to the taxpayers and the citizens, it's strange that we didn't get to this point, you know, long before I came to Portland. So by all means, I think that you'll find that you know, in city government, we don't do much ROI tracking, I don't think. But I'm very confident that if you approve these 1.5 FTEs, you'll actually find that it probably makes sense to pull out another 1.5 FTE just on the general principle of instead of siloing people and forcing people onto a track, talking about how workers can collaborate in their different capacities and produce the best results for the people of Portland. Thank you.
Good morning.
Well, Commissioners and Mayor Hales, my name is Crystal Ilinski, and speaking on this agenda item is, I'm very pleased to be here today with some of my heroes, people I've been following and working with for many years. I am here to express concern about what I've seen over the years and also hope that this could bring. It doesn't operate in a vacuum. I mentioned earlier about our environmental declarations, our homelessness declarations, announcements and lofty ideals that we put out without any teeth, any way to monitor it, follow through. I would really like to see this worked on. When we talk about engaging more minorities, women, minority contracts, for example, we know that we've been talking about it for a long time, and yet the procurement office, the auditor found that the procurement office doesn't really operate. And we're using token agencies and not real tangible results. We are a huge city. We have a lot of talent, a lot of different ways of looking at things. We don't need to continue to do the same I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this, but to say, okay, we've got that 1% dealt with and now we're doing well. So I would really like to see this on, like when we talked about the homelessness 10-year plan to end homelessness, that we have action like we did back in the days with the, when Eric Sten was here and we worked on that. I have personal experience with agencies, nonprofits that pretend to help people with disabilities. And if mostly they just exploit people with disabilities and they get away with it because we don't know what it looks like to have our standards set. If you as the city, as an employer, can get this right, working with equity, minorities, even with the issues with homelessness, we can set the standard for these nonprofits that, for example, I recently tried to get a job that had to do with housing, that a lot of disabled people are homeless, and were promised so-called good housing, which is turns out is not accessible. They're not very good at accommodating. And then they make you work, say, for example, cleaning toilets at PSU, my alma mater, for minimum wage for 10 hours a day. I do not want to see this anymore. I hope you can set the standard. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, we did have some more questions, I think, Anna, for you and Gail. So come back up, please, and let's address those. Questions? Concerns? I think, Amanda, you want to go?
I just have a follow-up question to what you read from the report and about the cost to provide the accommodation is less than the cost of not providing the accommodation in terms of risk. But my question is, if an accommodation is needed, does the Bureau's budget take that, or is there a central budget that a Bureau could apply for?
No, it would come out of the Bureau's budget, Commissioner.
So I think that's something that we need to look at. It may be a lot more possible to fund an accommodation in a big bureau like Parks, for example, than it is in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement or even the Office of Equity and Human Rights. So I think moving forward, I don't know if that's included as a recommendation in the strategic plan, but as a practical matter, I think it should be considered.
Absolutely. It's not included in the plan, but can certainly be added to the work list.
Yeah, and my other question, which is really not to you, but the rest of my colleagues, don't know quite where the Office of Management and Finance's budget falls in the rank order of which how much each bureaus get in the budget. But part of the question I think that we will be answering in the budget is, do we have to give extra to fund something as crucial as this, or should a bureau's budget be reorganized so that this becomes a priority, whether or not there's additional funding?
Fair question. Good point. Okay, other questions or comments for staff here?
Anna, nice work. Would you remind me, what do you anticipate will be Michael Sporlick's ongoing role? He's authored the white paper. He's interviewed us. He's made a number of very thoughtful recommendations. What is his potential future role with the city?
Well, in terms of this particular project, that we are finished with that, so we'll be moving forward with the plan. But the potential role would be to contract with Michael to work with the design committee for the remodel of the Portland building to ensure that design does create a welcoming environment for everybody. Now that has just a suggestion that I'll be following up with Fred Miller on.
Okay. You mentioned earlier in this presentation that we sometimes have challenges sharing information, and that a bureau may be doing something and innovating, but it may not be, that information may not migrate. I recently, at Fred's invitation, went to a meeting of bureau directors, and we talked a little bit about communication with our customers and some uniform standards, and I gave some feedback as a customer on something I had gone through. But this is the age-old challenge with our former government. Because each of us, we have commissioners in charge, they're independent actors overseeing bureaus, and yet we're trying to establish citywide standards. So I guess the conversation I'd like us to have as a follow-up to this is, who is best positioned to set the marker and then make sure that we're meeting citywide standards? Is it the CAO, the Chief Administrative Officer, through that process? Is it HR? With a directive signed by the mayor saying these are the minimum expectations? Is it something that Dante James, Office of Equity, establishes as baseline expectations? And then are we expected, for example, to set those expectations in the written letters of expectations we give our bureau directors? So, I mean, it is, I almost feel like every time we go through an important exercise like this, we have to be very clear about how we set the bar and how we enforce it. Because if we don't, then it's not entirely clear how we get there. I have often thought, actually, that just as the mayor issues an executive order or its equivalent assigning bureaus, we could get to a point where there's a similar flavor, maybe at the time of bureaus are assigned, that sets mean, the power to set a bureau implicitly comes with the power to set some expectations about how you manage the bureau. Right. And mayors are not shy in using that prerogative in assigning bureaus to say, you know, things like, you share my passion for X, Y, and Z, right? And that's a precondition to the bureau being assigned. Let's think about how we get beyond good intentions to making it clear to all bureaus that there are baseline expectations and then some kind of follow-through. And it might be, particularly in the area of sharing best practices and innovation, it might be something where we do an annual work session where those things come to all of us. But where a bureau is doing good work, it shouldn't just be communicated with Dante or shared at a FRED meeting. The other bureaus should be inspired to put that into practice.
Good idea.
It's the age-old challenge we have in terms of our form of government, but I'd like to maybe use this as a test for how we might take it to the next level.
I think that's an excellent idea. One of the things that we have talked about that haven't presented to any of the commissioners, the mayor yet, is sort of a general list of expectations for bureau directors as well. Would be particularly around these citywide initiatives, which I think would be very helpful. And annual work session, other reporting would be really great.
Well, and I, you know, look at the work you've done, for example, institutionalizing the 2.02 training and work. I mean, it's now not discretionary, it's mandatory, and then there's tracking. We get all these emails following up. I mean, that's how you go from good intentions to a structure that requires that everyone get the training and the follow-through.
Yes. Commissioner, could you just explain to people at home what 2.02 is?
2.02 is the training we get on our policies around sexual harassment and related policies. Two other things. You know, we're going through a period of transition. We have a mayor-elect. We don't know how this government's going to be organized starting January 1st, but I have said on behalf of the bureaus I have the honor of leading, we do want to put into place the pilot on Project Search. And the beauty, Mayor, of that program is Seattle has already done a lot of the hard work. And it actually in Seattle came out of the mayor's office. So and so I think it actually has to come out of a mayor's office or a commissioner's office for this to go forward. I think we pick a bureau, and I think the Water Bureau wants to step up and be considered as the first pilot. Work out the details with HR and see if we can pilot this, test it, and then see whether it has whether it's something that we could export to other bureaus. So we do want to go forward with that, even though there's some uncertainty about who will be doing what in the new administration. And then finally, I'm just unclear about the budget piece. Is it your intention to come forward in the fall bump or in the regular budget to seek the additional resources?
In the regular budget.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other questions, comments, good suggestions? Thank you both very much. Let's take a vote, please, then, on the first of the two resolutions.
Well, I want to thank you, Anna and Gail and the Commission on Disabilities and everybody who's worked on this model employer resolution. Certainly, as the testimony indicates, and I think as we all know, we can and must do a better job providing employment opportunities for people with disabilities. I think, Anna, you sort of mentioned it in passing that, you know, work helps make people happy. Sometimes we don't feel that way when we're working too much, but when people are out on the outside looking in of a work environment, and which too many people with disabilities find themselves in, I think there is a lot they yearn for in terms of the camaraderie we have from just being around people and the positive sense, as you said, I think maybe Gail said that, of working for the city, the sense of public service that it instills in so many of us. So this is very important work, and appreciate all your hard work and everybody being here today. Aye.
Novick.
I also appreciate your hard work and appreciate everyone's testimony today. When Michael Swarlick told me about the appallingly low percentage of people in our workforce who identify as people with disabilities, I was stunned. And as Ian Jaquis said, the number is so low that doubtless we have a higher percentage of the workforce who are people with disabilities who aren't reporting that, which is itself a problem, but it's also so low that obviously people with disabilities are wildly underrepresented in our workforce, and really appreciate the fact that HR is working to design policies and alert us to the policies that can hopefully remedy that situation. So I realize that technically this is the 2016 isn't about that issue, but I just wanted to. So I probably won't say anything in the second vote. But again, thank you very, very much. And thanks to everybody who spoke today. And thanks especially to Michael, who just did phenomenal work. Aye.
Fritz. Well, obviously, all of us up here, and I think everyone is recognizing there's such a lot of overlap between being a model, an employer of choice for everybody, and also being an entity which values people working with disabilities, and recognizing that people with disabilities have already on a daily basis worked really hard and overcome many challenges, which is what we want from our city employees. So on the employer of choice, I personally will be very interested in having the grant with Portland State or someone else to look at what are those factors. And I would encourage some thinking, too, with the overlap on becoming an employer of choice for people with disabilities, how could we structure an employee survey in a manner that people feel much more comfortable with answering the questions honestly. You know, I have six people working with me. We get aggregated data, but since there's only seven of us in my office, when it's identified as the Commissioner of Utilities, it's probably one of us. People are going to feel, well, I wonder which. So I think it should, when people are more comfortable, and I think it overlaps into people with experiencing mental illnesses or who have experienced mental illnesses, which is one of the disabilities that we struggle to provide accommodations with in many different places. So I think this is a really good start. And as I mentioned in my previous comments, I believe we should be asking the new chief administrative officer, how can you make this happen, and not always expecting the answer, give us more resources, but rather, if this is the most important thing, which, you know, for a Bureau of Human Resources, you put such a lot of work into this, Anna, and I really appreciate all of the work that you've done, your leadership, recognizing so many different equity issues and becoming more inclusive in many different ways. So thank you very much for your work and for this presentation. Aye.
I want to join with my colleagues in thanking Anna and Gail and everyone who's been working on this. Anna, you've clearly identified this as a core issue that you care about and that you've led on, and we appreciate that, because it's going to take tenacious leadership for us to move the needle on this, and so thank you. I think Michael impressed everybody up here when he interviewed us and then wrote the report, and so he's done a great service. Someone mentioned in their testimony that it was 26 years ago that the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed. And it's worth remembering that it was signed into law by a Republican president. So it was not then seen as a partisan issue. It was seen as a next important step towards a civil rights agenda that was the underlying value was to make America live up to its highest ideals. I wonder today whether this could pass the Congress of the United States that currently has organized, a Congress that consistently fails to address the issues of concern to Americans but does find time to pass bills naming post offices. I wonder whether this would pass or would even have broad support from one party. We have work to do. We want to become a model employer, an employer of choice. And for all the reasons set forth in the white paper, I think we're ready to get to work. The one thing I would say on funding, and I want to echo what my friend Commissioner Fritz said, you know, when we sign on to strategic plans and model employer policies and the like, I think implicit in that is we're going to put the resources behind it to help you be successful. I've been a little frustrated, for example, when we adopted the age-friendly Portland plan, but, you know, we're always having to sort of beg, borrow, and plead to get funding to do even the most modest part of that. So I take very seriously our responsibility. Once we've adopted a big plan with with goals and aspirations, I think we have to follow through with the resources to give you and others the resources to be successful. My bureaus look forward to joining with all the other bureaus in implementing a number of these recommendations, and I'm personally very encouraged by what Project Search and as a concept could mean to our city in providing opportunities for people with developmental disabilities. So thank you for your good work. Thanks to all the commissioners who came out today to testify, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Anything else?
Well, I want to thank these committed public professionals and the volunteers that have come here today to remind us that this is important work and that we're committed to it. So thank you very much. Very pleased to vote aye. And now on the second resolution, please, on adopting the strategic plan.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Again, thanks so much to Michael and Anna and everybody else who worked on this. Aye.
Ritz.
So this is to become the model employer of people with disabilities. One of the first things I got to do as a new city council member in 2009 was to swear in and establish the Portland Commission on Disability, which Mayor Tom Potter had established or set on the path to being done with our great Nicole Chiron, who is now with the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And then when Mayor Sam Adams and I co-founded the Office of Equity and Human Rights, we did so after robust participation from the people of the Portland Commission on Disability, insisting that Portland, which is now one of the only ones in the nation that recognizes disability along with race as two of the biggest challenges that we need to address, and we need to address them soon. I was very struck by the video from one of the Portland Commissioners on Disability and also the comments from each one of them, the example of Philip Wolf needing accommodation, and I appreciate the what you did to make sure that that happened and that he could participate. It also took us up here noticing that Commissioner Philip Wolf was suddenly not tracking as he had been doing when he was watching the captioning before. So the video suggested that all of us are at risk to becoming disabled, and I think if we live long enough, it's fair to say that all of us will have some disability at one time or another. So I would encourage, again, going back to that survey, to check often as to, it's not a static number for the people with disabilities. So part of the equation is getting people to self-identify, but part of it, we may see an increasing, it might depend on the age of the workforce or what else is going on. And so politicians are kind of in the public eye anyway, so we get asked all kinds of questions, but I would appreciate an ongoing annual survey to keep checking in, because it's really important. We need to know where we are before we can figure out how we're going to get where we need to be going. Thank you very much. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
You know, it's about talent. That was brought up today, that in a world where talent is preeminent in an organization's success, we need to make sure that we're attracting and accommodating talented people. So that's what this is about. It's also about doing the right thing. And, you know, we see a lot of plans and reports. This one was particularly compelling and clear. And I just want to read the seven key assumptions that are on page 10 and 11 of this report, because I think they really are arresting. One is, number one, disability is a normal part of the human condition. Two, able-bodied privilege needs to be unpacked. Three, a model employer proactively addresses inequities. Four, a model employer strives to meet a standard above what's legally required. Five, requests for reasonable accommodation are legitimate. Six, the Bureau of Human Resources needs to be the decider in reasonable accommodations. And seven, an inconsistent approach to reasonable accommodation could make the city more liable. That's very clear. That builds a really good floor for this very important work. Thank you very much. Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move.